This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 15th of July, 2022. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording, please ring Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. Ring that number rather than the number on the key fob. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, do make sure it is plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. Now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Radical plans to improve city centre traffic flow. Calls for e-scooter trial to be revived, and baton relay arrives in Winchester. And the first headline story, please, Daphne.
Work is well underway in several radical schemes to improve traffic in the city centre, including electric buses, but civic chiefs have come under fire from green campaigners. As previously reported, the City Council has a movement strategy to reduce congestion and improve air quality. Environmental activists say it has betrayed its promises and is not doing enough to tackle the climate crisis. Too little is being done to remove vehicles from the city centre, claim campaigners. The Council is considering using income from car parks, now recovered from COVID, to support bus services, which have yet to see a full return of passengers. The Health and Environment Committee heard that bus companies are in trouble post-COVID. Andy Hickman, head of programme at the council, said, "The bus industry is struggling and COVID has had a big impact. Also concerning is that the County Council did not get any bus service grant from the government. We are looking at how the City Council can fund bus services, looking at using some of our parking income to support buses." Excuse me. Councillor Brian Laming told the committee that some parts of the city has notably worse bus services than others, citing his ward of Oliver's Battery. Mr Hickman said, "We are looking at using parking income, services that could become commercial in time but need pump priming. That is a really good opportunity." Electric buses are to be trialled in the city this summer. The council is looking at electricity supply to see if more buses can be accommodated and charged overnight. Work is being undertaken on making part of the one-way system two-way, including part of Upper Brook Street, Friars Gate, Eastgate Street and Union Street. The reduction in congestion would cut pollution and improve air quality, particularly in congested St George's Street. Mr Hickman said there was public support for the changes. Other changes on the way include getting rid of the free half-hour parking in the city centre and replacing it with a free hour further out, and differential charging based on vehicle emissions. Jeff Hobbs, Principal Transport Planner at Hampshire County Council, told the committee the county was reviewing its approach to 20-mile-per-hour speed limits, highly popular among greener members of the public. The committee heard about Mini Holland schemes, introducing Dutch-style cycling infrastructure to promote cycling. A feasibility study is being carried out to create a cycle and walking corridor in the Worthy Road, Worthy Lane, Kingsworthy area. Ideas include extending the cycle route north from Bedfield Lane to Church Lane in Kingsworthy, widening of the existing shared path on Worthy Road between Bedfield Lane and Dyson Drive in Abbots Barton, a new toucan crossing on Worthy Road south of Stoke Road, which local people have been campaigning for years, a new crossing on Worthy Lane by the Hyde Church Lane, and extending the cycle path south from Dyson Drive to Hyde Street. But the latest report on the movement strategy came under fire from green campaigners. Phil Gagg of Winchester Action on Climate Change was critical. This report does not just deliver. It does not address climate change. It does not address climate emissions at all. You can't get away with business as usual.
Calls for e-scooter trial to be revived. Calls have been made for e-scooters to be introduced in Winchester amid concerns the city is falling behind the times with its transport links. Previous plans to trial e-scooters were scrapped last year because of disruption to travel patterns as a result of COVID. Some residents have since suggested the scheme should be revisited amid the rising cost of fuel prices. However, fresh concerns have been raised about the safety of the scooters after an 8-year-old girl had her leg broken during a collision with a rider in Andover. Ryan Love, 27, commutes from South Wanston to London each day for work, and currently relies on bus links to get him to Winchester train station. But with the number of services declining with each calendar year, he says it is becoming increasingly difficult for him to rely on public transport. Having visited several cities which are currently trialling e-scooters, the analyst and PhD student says there is no reason the same couldn't be done in Winchester. The rationale given as to why we don't have them is that we haven't got the travel infrastructure. But yet we have got space for e-bikes, which take up just as much room, he said. It's nonsense, really. E-bikes require bike lanes, as do e-scooters. So you can't really have one without the other. Fuel has gone up, parking has gone up, and we're coming out of COVID. Yet we don't even have the option. Steve Bryan MP backed the concept. I am hugely supportive of this, he said. We're not only extending the trials elsewhere, we're also legislating in this session to get standards so that they can be bought and used safely and privately. There were 38 accidents involving e-scooters across Hampshire in 2021, a steep rise from the 17 recorded in 2020. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of the City Council, said, "We were working with the County Council regarding the possibility of trialling rented e-scooters, but with the illegality using scooters on pavements and in pedestrianised areas, and especially the risks of having e-scooters on the one-way system, this has meant that we were unable to create a scheme that could operate safely."
Baton relay arrives in Winchester. The Queen's Baton Relay arrived at Winchester Sport and Leisure Park as part of the 294-day-long Commonwealth Tour ahead of Birmingham 2022 Commonwealth Games. The baton was welcomed to Winchester on the 6th of July at the Winchester Leisure Centre by Winchester City councillors, local school children and members of the public. The baton was carried to the front of the Leisure Centre by baton bearer Jordan Wiley, where a parade of performers and samba drummers awaited, along with the Mayor of Winchester. Councillor Derek Green, the Mayor of Winchester, said, "I'm very excited to see the baton come to Winchester. It's a great honour to have it at our new leisure centre. It's showcasing Winchester and what we can do for sport." Leader of the City Council, Martin Todd, said, "I have to say, when you're surrounded by loads and loads of school children from local schools who are really excited, that lifts you up to be even more excited." And this piece is surrounded by three photographs. First of all, we have baton bearer Barry Wiles completing a lap, and second Winchester baton bearer Norrie Bissett also carrying the baton, and at the bottom, the Mayor of Winchester actually holding the baton with Jordan Wiley. "I must say the baton looks a very strange object, more like a defensive weapon than a celebratory thing."
Thank you, Frida. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Beadle, Sylvia Joyce, died peacefully at her home of over 50 years in Kingsworthy on Tuesday the 5th of July 2022. Broomfield, James William, passed away on the 2nd of July 2022, aged 63 years. Burgess, William, known as Bill, passed away suddenly at home on Monday the 27th of June 2022, aged 91. Byers, Malcolm, known as Butch, sadly passed away on the 21st of June, aged 71. Cole, Eileen Olive, known as Ging, passed away peacefully in Southampton General Hospital on Saturday the 25th of June 2022, aged 88 years. Ford, Michael, sadly passed away at home on the 1st of July 2022, aged 74 years. McDowell, Gwen, of Ballymena and Hampshire. On the 3rd of July 2022, Gwen passed away peacefully in Hampshire, aged 77. Christian comment has been written by the Reverend Philip Crinks this week.
Thank you, Daphne.
If you were lucky enough to visit the beautiful village of Hursley on a summer's day, as I did recently, you may be stirred to praise the Creator. "New every morning is the love, our wakening and uprising prove, through sleep and darkness safely brought, restored to life and power and thought. New mercies each returning day hover around us while we pray. New perils past, new sins forgiven, new thoughts of God, new hopes of heaven." Those words, with their themes of renewal and the continuing faithfulness of God, are from one of the greatest collections of religious poetry ever produced, John Keble's The Christian Year, published in 1827, and the best-selling volume of the century in England. They have a close connection with our area because it was in Hursley that Keble lived much of his life. He is recalled today through the dedication of the excellent village school and in All Saints Church, where he served faithfully as vicar for 30 years. For his poetry, vision and faithfulness, the church remembers him on July the 14th each year. Most of Keble's poems follow, as the title would suggest, an annual cycle. They trace great festivals and seasonal themes. But the poem which includes the verses beginning "New Every Morning" is designed to be one suitable every day. Every day? But what if it is a day far from a blissful visit to Hursley? What if it is a day marked by sorrow, grief and loss, by aspirations frustrated, by unhealed conflict, by a sense that all has gone wrong with the world? Above the poem, Keble wrote, "His compassions fail not, they are new every morning." Those are famous verses from the Book of Lamentation, and their context is one of national disaster, the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians in 586 BC, the forced exile of many of the people. Their writer laments, expressing extreme grief. Indeed, he wonders if God has abandoned his people. Yet somehow the candle of their light does not completely go out. In the renewal of each coming day, they sense the mercy of God, and for this he raises the voice of praise. To raise a note of praise alongside lamentation may seem confused, or at least dissonant. Isn't praise the opposite of lamentation? Well, not exactly. Christian faith certainly sees the two as not so much opposite as complementary. To face our deep losses, to acknowledge them, to express our grief at them, is necessary. To know that the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, his compassion never comes to an end, they are new every morning and great is his faithfulness, to quote those verses in full, is also necessary. Indeed, if we do not know the latter, we may not be able to achieve the former. To know that in this world we must experience loss, to accept that we yearn for something more whole, more holy, beyond this world of which we cannot by our own merits be worthy, to seek to begin sharing in that wholeness now, this is what it is to be human. Keble knew. And so he ended his poem, "Only, O Lord, in thy dear love, fit us for perfect rest above, and help us this and every day to live more nearly as we pray." And that came from the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Thank you, Daphne. Well, we've got 9 very short letters to the editor this week. Nick, can you start us off with Hampshire Day, please?
Yes, and firstly, I apologise for the fact that Hampshire Day is actually the day, it's today, the day we're recording this, July the 15th, so it will have happened by the time you listen to it. This letter is from the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, no less. July the 15th is designated Hampshire Day, with an aim to provide an annual opportunity to remember Hampshire's rich history and how county life has evolved over time. As well as looking forward to the future, it is a day for local people to celebrate their own diverse communities, as well as sharing pride in Hampshire's heritage, culture, natural environment and people. The country faces many challenges, both economically and socially at this moment in time, and as I travel the county visiting charities, I am constantly surprised at the time, energy and sheer hard work volunteers give in order to help their communities. The war in Ukraine has also shown the generosity of spirit in this country as the Ukrainians fight for their freedom. In the midst of these most challenging times, people have found new ways, new spaces and new ideas to come together as a community. I do hope you will join me in celebrating Hampshire Day and raising the Hampshire flag. Hampshire Day gives us the opportunity to thank those who have worked tirelessly to help others in their communities over the last 12 months. The nation could not function without them. Thank you to you all. And that is from Nigel Atkinson, Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Searle's House, Gar Street in Winchester.
This letter from Michael Campbell, MBEDL, Sheldon Park House, refers to a letter in the Hampshire Chronicle, June the 30th, from someone called Michael Carden and headed Fake Heraldry. Michael Carden is absolutely correct on both scores that he mentions. The first I can vouch for from personal knowledge, and the second from an understanding at the time. How lucky Hampshire was to have had Colin Stansfield Smith as our county architect, whose legacy of well-designed county funding buildings is so much appreciated. Michael Carden is the most likely of my candidates for exposing my rather cheeky question in my last letter. A scholarly architect who has done so much for the preservation of historic buildings. I know he is right to have exposed the shields as fakes because I was associated with the company that did the redevelopment of that wing of the Guildhall in partnership with Eldridge Pope, who ran the pub that occupied part of it. We tried to make the shields more appropriate by having them truly representative of families with close association with Winchester. We discussed this with the College of Arms and quickly appreciated the enormity of the task, over and above the difficulty of deciding which families to choose. The College of Arms explained that no arms can be displayed without the authority of the family entitled to wear them, and that alone could take months or even years. And then the College of Arms would have to design the arms appropriate to the actual member of that family who we were recognising. Needless to say, the programme for the development did not allow for such delay. So we, very ashamedly, asked the architect to make them up. I entirely agree that this travesty should be corrected on such a prominent building, so perhaps those engaged in any current work, plus the College of Art, could consider this. Perhaps our local herald extraordinary of the College of Arms, Alistair Bruce, might be able to assist. And that letter comes from Michael Campbell, MBEDL, Sheldon Park House.
And this next letter comes from Phil Yates and it's headed College Reunions. I refer to the article in the Hampshire Chronicle last week relating to Peter Simmons' sixth form college reunion when old Simonians met after 45 years. I can go one better. In 1996, I teamed up with old boys who were at the school in 1943. Over 50 years later, we were the wartime scholars and attended school in the mornings. The school was occupied by Portsmouth Grammar School for Boys in the afternoons. I didn't know that. We were also on a strict rota for fire watching during night time and consequently had the following morning off school to catch up on lost sleep. Those were the days, wartime schooling. And that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And the next letter is about Sparsholt's history. Fellow governors of Sparsholt College agreed in October 2020 that I should write its history in advance of its 125th anniversary in 2024. It was founded as Hampshire Farm School at Old Basing in 1899 and moved to its present site in Sparsholt in 1914. The book, circa 86,000 words, is nearly finished, and I'm seeing my publisher again this week. It is likely that it will be published towards the end of this year. Over the period of 125 years, nearly, there have been many references to the college in 20th century issues of the Hampshire Chronicle and other Hampshire newspapers at the time, which, as a subscriber to the British Newspaper Archive Service, I have identified and used. And that short letter is from Dr. John Lander, Gravel Lane, Barton Stacey.
This letter is headed Duty Failed and refers to the Chronicle on July the 7th, where it was stated that Southern Water had been sent out to assess the situation on Winchester High Street. South West Water is wholly responsible for the disgusting sewage spill, and it is not the first occasion. Their revenue and profits should be directed at building more sewage processing facilities, which are essential not only for the good health of residents, but in also having a detrimental effect on our chalk-based rivers, including the Itchen, once poet John Keats' favourite riverside walk. Southern Water is failing in its duty. Unlike gas and electric utilities, clean water and proper sewage management is essential for good health. Hopefully the assessment will become action and not words. That letter is from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Next letter is headed National Express and it comes from Brian Scott. Arrived on National Express coach at St Catherine's car park. The coach had to mount into the grass to get in due to the tortuous entry road. Good job it's not muddy. Dropped off by the very doubtful toilets, closed, and found there were a few characters lurking in the bushes. No CCTV. If I had been a lone female, I would have been very apprehensive. Then found the famous park and ride bus does not run on Sundays, and after phoning for a taxi, found there could be a 2-hour wait, shortage of drivers. Can the City Fathers sacrifice some of the parking at King Alfred, and then the coach could do a 2-point turn? Alternatively, locate the coach stop at the Discovery Centre. I will use my car for the trips in future. And that's from Brian Scott, Southgate Street, Winchester.
This one's from Marvin Naylor, who's one of Winchester's buskers, who you may well have seen on the streets of Winchester.
Yes.
And the title is No Action Over Threat of Violence. Last Saturday afternoon, I endured a verbal assault ending with a threat to violence from a local undesirable. Clearly and unaccountably, not a Chronicle reader, or I feel sure he would have taken up my advice concerning buskers and their repertoire. Stop complaining about buskers. Chronicle, Thursday the 5th of May. After the undesirable had slunked off, no doubt to make someone else's life hell, a man came up and told me he'd phoned the police. Reassured by this, I dusted myself down, collected my thoughts, and resumed my playing while waiting for someone to arrive. 2 hours later, no one had appeared, nor was there any sign of any police, CPSOs, the length of the high street as I made my way home. On my return, I filled out a form on the police website, and this morning I received a reply stating that there would be no investigation, quote, due to there being no suspect, CCTV footage or witnesses, unquote. Despite me informing them that I had recorded part of the incident on my phone camera, where the suspect can clearly be seen. However, even if I hadn't got the footage, this incident took place at the intersection of Market Lane and Winchester High Street, where there is at least one CCTV camera, although it could have been switched off. If so, this is very concerning. And where was the police presence on a very busy, hot weekend, with many the worse for drink? Perhaps the police were taking the weekend off after the previous gruelling Hatfair weekend. Indeed, I was out today, Sunday, and there was still none to be found. Though, thankfully, no further verbal assaults on me. And that's accompanied by a picture taken last year, shown in the Hampshire Chronicle last year, of Marvin Naylor busking at the square in the centre of Winchester. It's the letter from Marvin B. Naylor, Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter is headed Prove Claims, and it's from David Hughes of Downlands Way, South Wanston. I seriously challenge the unsubstantiated assertions as to the benefits of 20 miles per hour speed limits made by Councillor Alan Dowden in his letter to the Hampshire Chronicle on July the 7th. Where did those figures come from, and how were they validated?
And the next letter is headlined Helping Hands, and it comes from Steve Goodwin. May I express my sincere appreciation to all the people who assisted my wife after her fall on Lanham Lane on Monday at the end of our off-road run. She was badly shaken up with skinned arm, cuts and grazes. Several people walking on Lanham Lane asked if they could help, but we managed to walk back to take down Meads. A lady and a mini countryman then stopped and very kindly offered to stay with Jill while I ran home to pick up the car. When I got back, another lady, having building work at her house, had given Jill a glass of water, and two of her builders, ex-firemen, cleaned her up and dressed her wounds, making it easier to take her to A&E, where she was given excellent medical attention by a lovely nurse called Andrea. Our sincere thanks go to all of these people, most of whose names we do not know. And that's from Steve Goodwin, Goring Field, Take Down, Winchester.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write an old-fashioned letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with Chronicle Comment, First Person and Belgarum. The editor heads up her article this week with E-scooters could be a game changer. Winchester City Council has been wrestling with the dominance of the motor car for more than 50 years. In 1974, the High Street became pedestrian only, sparking a torrent of opposition that it would kill trade. Of course it didn't, and the city centre adapted as it has always done. Since then, the council has come up with many ideas over the years to create a city where the car is not a dictator, such as further pedestrianisation, park and ride, and residents-only parking. On the front page, we reported on the latest with e-scooters, and we support a proper trial of these machines. Their potential dangers are clear, but the benefits of luring people out of motor cars are also obvious and compelling. Encouraging cycling with better infrastructure is also important, but Winchester's hilly terrain will always limit efforts to get people onto two wheels. E-scooters are different, combining small size and ease of use with power to tackle hills such as Romsey Road, Magdalen Hill, and the longest slope of all, Andover Road. They could be a game changer. Now, Joanna Lewis has written first person this week. Stop River Park plans, she writes. Here's Frieda.
With a Tory leadership election about values, hopefully, currently underway and getting as hot as the temperature outside, how encouraging to see Portsmouth MP Penny Mordaunt high in the running. It seems she offers the Conservative Party a clean break with the sleazy uselessness of the past government. Her armed service background gives her a ramrod sense of duty for the public good. Nor is she a product of that old boy network, the chumocracy of the men in suits, always there to bend the rules to help each other out. If only we in Winchester could have a similar clean sweep of our equivalent boys' club. No greater example of this is the way in which the Lib Dem-led council and the grandees of local government, now joined by a Southampton university, have eyed up River Park, whilst being tone-deaf to the majority of its residents. It beggars belief what this lot are trying to pull off. Let's be crystal clear. This area is a public park held in trust by the City Council for you, the people of Winchester. There is currently a shortfall of open space in the city. Fact. What has been proposed will take a proportion of that out of public use, and you, the public, will lose access to key areas. How can anyone who loves Winchester support such a sell-off? How can this section of the River Itchen be given up to a developer? And that is exactly the setup here. Winchester City Council sees Southampton University as just another developer, because that is what it is. The council is committed to supporting, nay, handing over more of your money to further the commercial interests of the university and help pay for its legions of managerial staff. You will pay the cost of the demolition of the building. In return, the university will be given a free hand. There will be no restriction on selling on the site. There is no protection to maintain community facilities. And the fear is that if the hold in trust clause is broken, it sets a precedent for the whole site. Yet, as the wonderful friends of River Park have identified, Winchester has more students in proportion to the local population than either Cambridge or Oxford. With the current regime's addiction to self-aggrandizing schemes, the egomania has no time for proper public consultation. Stakeholders are shared information, whilst the democratic process is a sham. When the public were invited to a meeting in March, the room allocated was deliberately kept small, and to pre-online registration. The council responded to large numbers of the public turning up on the day by calling the police. But who is breaking the laws here? Just how many legal challenges have been made against Winchester City Council in recent years? Is there not a system of putting council leaders into special measures? A Hampshire Chronicle reader has legitimately asked, with so many big planning decisions being challenged. And every time there is a legal challenge, it means vast sums of council taxpayers' money is being used to defend the council. We have the most flimsy of planning laws, and we also have one of the most arrogant, out-of-touch councils. At least in the middle, we have smart, brave citizens rallying together, giving freely oodles of their time and their resources, never giving up. However, legal challenges are hugely expensive. Friends of River Park are appealing again for financial support. We can get involved in protesting, even if we cannot dig deep. They are hosting a public meeting on the evening of July 25th at the Rugby Club. Everyone who loves Winchester, who believes River Park should remain in public use, and who cares about the future of green space and the Itchen, should come along. There will be room for everyone.
We've got two pieces from Balgarum this week, which are right up Nick's street.
Yes, I'll try not to get too carried away on this first one. It's about a family-owned bus company's milestone. A local family-run coach service has had their 40th anniversary. Friday, July the 1st, marked the 40th anniversary of Mervyn's Coaches. The company, founded by Mervyn Annetts in 1982, now has three generations of the family operating the service. The coach company acknowledged the milestone on Facebook. Mervyn's Coaches would like to thank all of our customers and friends for your continued support, and we are committed to serving you with excellence for years to come. More than 200 people reacted to the post, with many commenting, "Congratulations." Emily Chilton said, "Happy anniversary. Amazing team. My family loved going on days out with you guys. You even did amazing for my prom transport in 2016. Customer Peter Brown commented, "Brilliant. Wonderful servants and friends to the community. See you soon." And that piece is accompanied by three photographs. The first one showing a display of parked buses outside their depot from different vintages. The second one showing a picture from the cab of a more modern vehicle with Mervyn himself with his cap on, stood in the background, and I guess probably one of his grandsons, definitely a son, but I think possibly a grandson, sat at the wheel of the vehicle. And the third photograph is of one of his vintage vehicles, a 1950 Bedford OB that I believe started life as a royal blue coach, now decorated in beautifully in Mervyn's colours, and the picture shows a bride kissing her groom, I assume, through the driver's cab window of the coach. And he does do many weddings, so it's a delightful photograph. The next Balgarum piece is entitled "When City Was Centre of Car Manufacture." Balgarum's favourite piece of wall painting in Hampshire. It's the Victorian sign for a car factory in Stonemason's Court off Parchment Street. It harks back to the time when the nascent car industry grew out of horse carriage manufacturing and before giants such as Austin and Morris ruled the roost. That the sign survives in good condition is testimony to the good quality of bricks used in the wall and the paint. It would be great to know where the bricks came from, perhaps Colton Common or Bishop's Waltham, then centres of the brick-making industry. And that piece is accompanied by one photograph taken in Parchment Street looking down the street, and you can see the painted advertisement. It's quite high up on the wall of the stonemason's building on the side. The background was painted white, and you can see from the letters painted on top of it, faded now, but you can see the words still: coach, carriage, motor and factory. And it's still there. If you've ever walked along Parchment Street, you will have probably looked up and seen that advert.
Thank you, Nick. Now, let's have a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. The Watercress line is set to welcome visitors to celebrate the 1950s and 60s at its Alsford and Ropley stations from Saturday, August the 27th to August the 29th. Now, I think that's August Bank Holiday weekend. Live performances include singer Stephanie Bell, who will join the Superjets, and Miss Holiday Swing. I think there's going to be quite a lot going on there. That's Alsford and Ropley over August Bank Holiday. And there's a picture of a lady in a floral dress jitterbugging with a chap who's looking like a bit like an American sailor of the period. Next item is, we've got a play by a Ukrainian writer in the city centre. The Chesil Theatre, the Winchester Dramatic Society, is staging The Government Inspector by Ukraine's most famous playwright, Nikolai Gogol. They write, "The Government Inspector is an uproarious romp which mocks the corruption and incompetence of small-town government." The talented Chesil Theatre team is using a modern adaptation by giving the play an eccentric and surreal tone, with steampunk design going for pace, colour and glorious absurdity. This slick and hilarious performance will be running from July the 16th to the 23rd, and you can get tickets from the Chesil website, www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. And a couple more local events. Winchester Ghost Tours. I'm thinking it's possibly, I don't know which days this is on, but they start at 8:30 p.m. at the Buttercross. The cost is £9. So if you want a spooky walk. On what day is on Saturday, Dogs and Gods Great Outdoor Theatre with the Roods at the Old Rectory, Droxford. There's the Rood Mechanicals are doing an outdoor show that will make you laugh out loud at Droxford. On Monday, the Delines are performing from, it's a country soul combo from Portland, Oregon, are performing at St. Mary's Church, Twyford, at 8 p.m. On Thursday the 21st, Will Whisson Music. Will Whisson is live at the Railway at 7:30 in St. Paul's Hill, Winchester. On Saturday the 23rd of July is Timsbury History Day. Come and discover the history of Timsbury from Saxon times onwards. There's talks from local historians, afternoon activities, bring a picnic lunch and share any local history you might have. And that's all based at St Andrew's Church, Manor Lane, Timsbury, near Romsey. Our Farley Live Music Party. Live Music Party returns to Farley with iconic funk, Motown and soul classics from Stevie Wonder, Jackson 5, Earth, Wind and Fire, Chic, etc. And that's Church Road, Farley. I think that's all we've got for you there. And now, here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 16th of July, the sun will set at 9:13 p.m. And on Wednesday the 20th of July, the sun will rise at 5:13 a.m. and set at 9:09 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, and the headline is Hampshire Town in the Britain in Bloom Awards. Whitchurch, in Bloom, is hoping for a silver to better last year's bronze in the small town category. Volunteers did a trial walk the route on Tuesday, June the 28th, ahead of the judging on Friday, July the 8th. So that's already been, hasn't it? Judging took place over 2 hours, where a judge walked around the town to see what the community have done and are working towards. The group, organised by Caroline Wells, used their Facebook page to encourage the community to volunteer and get gardening. Although stuck at home with COVID, Caroline has still been leading the charge in planting and tidying up in Whitchurch. She said, "We've been putting up lots of hanging baskets and planters. We've been sweeping the roads and pavements. We've done a few projects where we've completely cleared out some overgrown flower beds and replanted them. So it's pretty much a work in progress, which the judges like to see. They like to see that everything isn't necessarily amazing, but that there are projects you're working towards. For example, we want to adopt Whitchurch train station, but that will be for next year." Groups across Whitchurch have come together to get behind the Britain in Bloom effort, including the local scouts, conservationists and walking group. Caroline added, "The local co-op has been absolutely amazing. They gave us £150 as a community project award, and the staff came out with us for one day, and we were weeding the pavements outside the co-op. So they worked with us for a couple of hours, everybody on their hands and knees, weeding and cleaning. They're now doing a raffle where they have really good prizes from Bombay Sapphire and lots of the local businesses to raise more money. This year, the UK's biggest gardening competition has new criteria to promote sustainable gardening. The changes reflect the RHS's current campaign, Planet Friendly Gardening. The new eco-friendly criteria includes prioritising pollinator-friendly plants, maintaining wildlife habitats, eliminating the use of peat, reducing use of water mains, and tackling environmental issues through planting. And that's accompanied by a couple of photographs. One is of an array of all sorts of different flowers, which they probably planted in this new bed that they cleared. Geraniums, petunias, all kinds of things. And the other one is a bit of a mystery flower. I have asked, but we can't identify it here. It looks a bit like a sunburst with separate petals raying out from the middle, but they are a deep pink with white edging, and the centre is yellow with a pink frill round it. So prizes for anyone who knows what that one is.
The next piece is about a popular topic that for some reason didn't appear in the letters this week, and it's called Campaign Launched to Stop Diversion. Campaigners are stepping up their battle to stop a major road being diverted through a new Winchester estate. Members of Kings Barton Residents Association have launched a petition to increase pressure on road chiefs to reverse the diversion decision made in 2013. That will see Andover Road closed to through traffic and the traffic diverted along Winchester Avenue that goes through the middle of the Kings Barton development. The new estate currently has around 400 households out of the planned 2,000 being built by Carla Homes. The campaigners, Mike Slynn and Nigel Palmer, gathered signatures from passers-by on Winchester High Street on Friday. They say they have gathered around 3,000 names in total, comprising 1,900 online and around 1,000 on paper, all of the latter from Hampshire. Association committee member Nigel Palmer said 95% of the King's Barton household had signed the petition. Mr. Palmer said, "We have 3,500 people signed up. We would like Hampshire County Council to reconsider their decision made 10 years ago. We don't believe they need to close Andover Road to meet their ambitions and goals. We have been overwhelmed by the amount of support and also by the number of people who did not know about the closure. The campaigners say it would be wrong for 15,000 vehicles a day to go through the middle of the new development, increasing road casualties. The diversion will also increase traffic on other local roads through Littleton, Week and Hairstock. The issue may be discussed at the King's Barton Forum, a city council committee involving councillors, residents and Carla Holmes on Tuesday evening. Mr. Slynn will give a presentation at the county council meeting today, Thursday. So presumably he's already done that. And there is a picture of the two gentlemen with a big poster in the middle giving all the information. Mike Slynn and Nigel Palmer in the High Street last Friday.
Council motion on condition of rivers. Winchester City Council approved a motion to focus on the condition of the area's waterways. Councillor Malcolm Wallace, who represents the Green Party, proposed the motion at the meeting of the council on July the 6th. The motion is to protect the waterways by taking account of the impact of pollution, including sewage discharge. Councillor Wallace said Winchester District residents are deeply concerned about water quality, including the impact of nitrates, phosphates and regular waste water discharge, which includes untreated sewage, into our local rivers, and the impact this has on wildlife and on human health. In Winchester, Southern Water discharged sewage into local rivers and waterways over 250 times in 2021, totalling over 3,500 hours of sewage discharge in just 1 year. Releasing sewage into rivers is no longer an emergency-only situation, occurring as a result of severe storms, but seems to be an everyday occurrence, even in normal rainfall, and that we are in a situation of cumulative overload on the sewage and wastewater system. Whilst there are no long-term commitments, there are no plans in place which will address the immediate unacceptable situation, either locally by Southern Water or by national government. Councillor Margot Power has campaigned for the better protection of the area's chalk streams. She previously wrote to Southern Water bosses and Ofwat, the water regulator, asking them to stop dividends to shareholders until sewage stops flowing into waterways. Councillor Power said, "We can all agree that raw sewage in our waterways is unacceptable. I have witnessed the depletion in the wildlife in the chalk streams." Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, said, "I strongly support this motion. In my area, the sewage works had 56 spills in 2020, but 2,000 homes are due to be added in the next 15 years without changes to the sewage system. We need to address the problem." Councillor Paula Ferguson, Cabinet Member for Community and Housing, said residents were shocked at the amount of raw sewage being dumped in our rivers. "I'm glad to hear the issue is being addressed." Recent data revealed that Southern Water pumped 486 hours worth of raw sewage into the River Itchen in 2021-2022. The water company also made an operating profit of £138 million in the same period.
Man arrested after smashing through bollards. A suspected drug driver has been arrested after smashing a Land Rover through several bollards outside a busy Winchester Sainsbury's. Officers were called to the superstore in Badger Farm around 7:40 p.m. on Wednesday, June the 29th, following reports of a single vehicle collision. The black Land Rover had struck a number of bollards and traffic signs, causing huge damage before leaving the scene. A 39-year-old man of no fixed abode was arrested on suspicion of theft, possession of a Class C drug, and driving while unfit through drugs. He has since been released under investigation. Pictures taken from the scene show a long row of cordoned-off bollards almost completely flattened. One person likened them to giant skittles. A Sainsbury spokesperson said, "Police attended an incident in the car park of our Badger Farm superstore last Wednesday and we are supporting their investigation. We are working to repair the damage as soon as possible and are sorry for any inconvenience this may cause." And this is accompanied by a very striking photograph taken along the side of the Sainsbury's building, which you would pass driving out of it just before you come to the petrol station turn bit. And I can count 10 of those black plastic bollards just lying down on the road, and they certainly do look like skittles. It's just amazing what damage that car has done.
South Downs Rambler bus. After 2 years, the South Downs Rambler is back for the summer. The South Downs Rambler bus will run every Sunday from July the 10th to September the 11th, plus the bank holiday Monday on August the 29th, allowing the public to explore the South Downs Way between Winchester and Petersfield. The summer route and bus service was created in partnership by the South Downs National Park Authority, Hampshire County Council, Three Rivers Rail, Cross Country Trains and Blue Star. Mark Miller, rail officer for Three Rivers Community Rail Partnership, said, "We are pleased to announce the return of the South Downs Rambler bus linking Winchester and Petersfield stations, enabling passengers to enjoy the beauty of the countryside along the South Downs Way. Crisscrossing the course of the South Downs Way, it enables passengers to hop on and off the bus throughout the day and enjoy one of the South's best-loved long-distance footpaths. It also links railway stations for those visiting from further away, local attractions, stunning countryside, pretty villages, country pubs, and much more. We welcome you to have a great day out in Hampshire's South Downs National Park." The bus stops at tourist attractions such as the Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium, the views at Chesford Head, the gardens of Hinton Ampner, the Iron Age Hill Fort at Old Winchester Hill, the Langrish House Hotel, and a number of traditional village pubs and villages. Drivers of the South Downs Rambler have considerable knowledge of the South Downs area and are on hand for local guidance. And I'm afraid the only thing this doesn't seem to say is what the cost of using the bus is involved. But there is a picture of two happy, smiling passengers inside a bus. And also remember, although this one only runs on Sundays, the 67 bus between Winchester and Petersfield runs during the weekdays and on Saturdays.
Thank you for that extra information, Nick.
This piece is about a rare dwarf zebu calf born at Sparsholt College. Zebu cattle are those ones you often see in photographs of India when they have that curious hump on their shoulders. The Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre at Sparsholt College Group has welcomed the birth of a female dwarf zebu calf Bos taurus indicus. The calf, named Clover by the keepers, has been recorded as the first female zebu calf born in 6 years. The birth went smoothly out in the paddock, with calf Clover suckling from her mum within a couple of hours. There are only 17 dwarf zebu calves registered in the collections of the British and Irish Association of Zoos and Aquariums. Clover is the second calf born to mum Tonks. Her father is called Hector. Animal Health and Welfare Research Centre manager Calvin Allen said, Sparsholt College and University College Sparsholt currently have 2 bulls and 4 cow dwarf zebu. Clover will be an exciting addition for staff and students to work with and learn from. Clover will be an important animal in maintaining zebu populations in the UK due to the lack of females born in recent years. There is an enchanting picture of Tonks, the mother, and Clover, the delightful little baby. They're a sort of beautiful pale coffee colour. But I'm quite surprised they've called the baby Clover, because she's depicted standing in a field full of buttercups.
Oh. Spitfire roars over Stanmore Village fete. Crowds were amazed to see a Spitfire fly over their festivities in Swanmore. The aircraft had been arranged to fly over the Meon Valley village at the same time as its annual fete. The Spitfire was one of 6 which featured in RAF Battle of Britain Memorial flight for the Queen's Jubilee flypast in June, and the village had been selected for a special flypast of its own as part of the continuing celebrations. The fete, organised by Meon Valley Lions Club, returned to Swanmore Recreation Ground in Broad Lane for the first time in 3 years on Saturday, July the 9th. The day saw stalls, games, music, dancing, petting farm, raffle, a classic car and motorbike show, as well as a dog show. A post from the club said, "What an amazing day! Fabulous weather, fantastic support from the community, and a tremendous effort put in by the Lions, their partners, friends of Lions, past Lions and future Lions. It was a truly outstanding day." And there is a wonderful photograph of a typical English summer afternoon when the weather's good. With all the stalls and people in their summer clothes, and they're holding their phones up to the sky because the sky is a perfect blue with 1 or 2 tiny little white clouds, and there is the Spitfire coming low over the village. It certainly is a wonderful photograph.
Church to reopen 8 years after fire. A church in Ropley is set to reopen 8 years after a devastating fire. St Peter's Church will have a weekend of events to celebrate the reopening. On August the 26th, there will be an opening ceremony. On August the 27th, there will be an open day with children's activities, cake and tea. And there will be an opening church service on August the 28th at 10:30 p.m. And on the bank holiday Monday, August the 29th, the church will be open again with refreshments available. A spokesman said, 8 years ago, our beautiful church was devastated by fire. Now, thanks to the generosity and hard work of so many people, it is about to reopen. Many of you will remember the horrific sight of St Peter's burning. I hope you'll now take up the invitation to come and see it reborn. John Alexander has designed a remarkable building, and our contractors, Reside Construction, and many talented artisans have made that vision a reality. Preserving everything possible of the old and enhancing the building to create a space that can be used by generations to come. The people of Ropley and our supporters from near and far have been determined to put the church back into the heart of the village. Together they have created a place where all are welcome, where young and old alike can flourish, and where, over the August bank holiday weekend, we will be regathering to celebrate this remarkable achievement. We are still fundraising to complete and furnish the project. Please see our website, stpetersropley.org, or further information and click the donate button to support us with a gift. And that, sorry, is attached with a tiny little picture showing the smoke bellowing out from the church tower there from 8 years ago.
Dear. Hampshire Wineries at Wine Awards. Ooh, good news. Hampshire took home a total of 19 medals from the Wine GB Awards, making it the third most successful county behind Sussex and Kent, who dominated the medal tables with 61 and 60 medals respectively. The medal winners of the annual Wine GB Awards were announced on Wednesday, June the 29th, with producers from nearly every county in England and Wales winning medals. This year saw over 100 producers entering, the highest number of entries to the awards yet. Hattingley Valley near Alsford proved themselves as a quality winery, picking up a gold and a silver in the sparkling classic method category for its Reserve NV, which won the gold, and Blanc de Blanc 2014, which won the silver, and another two silvers in the still category, including the Hattingley Valley Still Pinot Noir from 2020 and the Still Chardonnay also from 2020. Founder and owner of Hattingley Valley, Simon Robinson, said, "We're always delighted to win awards, particularly from Wine GB, because it's the industry association. We're very proud, and it goes to show the consistency and quality that Hattingley produces, which is proven by the people who enjoy our wine."
Council makes cuts from transport budget. Almost £1 million are set to be cut from the budget that gets disabled youngsters to and from school. Following a public consultation, Hampshire County Council is looking to slash the home-to-school transport budget by £986,000. The service currently takes 12,000 children to and from school every day. These are children with special educational needs and disabilities. However, the County Council now plans to use more dedicated pick-up and drop-off points rather than going directly to children's homes. Multiple children could also be taken on single journeys, the County Council has suggested. Director of Children's Services, Steve Crocker, said, "These proposed changes would allow for route planning and vehicle use to utilise the efficiencies provided by increased use of collective pick-up points and multiple destinations. There is no statutory requirement for home-to-school transport to be a door-to-door service or to provide for individual establishments. Parents can be asked to accompany their child to and from a collection point. Parents of these children have already voiced their opposition to these proposals."
And here's another bad news transport story, I'm afraid. Bus driver shortages cause delays. A bus company has said driver shortages and sickness saw it scrap services in Winchester on Tuesday. Stagecoach South put the news out via its Twitter page. Several services were affected. The 66 service serving Winchester to Romsey was impacted in both directions. Shortages also led to some cancellations of the 64, 69 and 3 services, with Stagecoach later announcing the 5 service between Winchester and Badger Farm would not operate throughout the afternoon. Similar issues have been seen in Basingstoke and Guildford. This isn't the first time residents have been left frustrated by a scaled-back service. In May, driver and vehicle shortages caused similar levels of disruption. One bus driver, who did not want to be named, said, "The shortages are not just in Winchester or just Stagecoach. It is a nationwide problem. There simply aren't enough bus drivers." Stagecoach has been contacted for further comment.
Public living room held at Winchester Gardens. Abbey Gardens was home to Winchester's first ever public living room, a concept aimed at helping people to build new relationships. Run by Camarados, the sessions support people in making new connections within their community through the setup of public living rooms. Winchester's first public living room was held on Saturday, July the 9th. A public living room offers a no-agenda space where people are free to enjoy the company of others. Each public living room is different in how it operates, whether they're weekly, daily, or online. The movement is led by ordinary members of the public, whilst the community interest company, Camarados, is there to promote the ethos and provide advice for people looking to set up their own public living room. MHA Communities Winchester worker Luke Buckland said he feels it's important to have opportunities to meet new people. The 27-year-old said, "We've got online shopping and self-service checkouts, so there's no longer many opportunities to interact with other people. I was inspired by some of the other public living rooms as I've seen some photos of them in action, and I thought it would be really nice to create a space in Winchester." Camarados offer a free box for those wishing to start their own public living room, including props to create a nice environment.
Hampshire County Council celebrates its teachers. Two members of Winchester's education staff are among a group celebrated by Hampshire County Council. Hampshire's most dedicated and innovative education staff were honoured in the Education Awards at the Great Hall in Winchester. Award recipients were selected by fellow educators from nominations submitted by many of Hampshire's 500-plus schools and colleges. Congratulating the award recipients and nominees, Councillor Ros Chadd, Deputy Leader and Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, said, "Hampshire County Council's Education Awards are an opportunity to say a very special thank you to every member of staff, governor and volunteer, whether they have been singled out for an award or not. The work of each and every one of them is important, appreciated and valued." Award recipients from Winchester include the wellbeing team at Sparshot College, who focused on helping students succeed, and Chris Wilson, also at Sparshot College, who won praise for his approach and his high level of professional expertise. And the accompanying photograph shows Giles Brandreth at the front, presumably handing out the awards, together with Councillor Ros Chadd, and the teachers lined up on a flight of steps behind. And it's interesting that the majority of the teachers are women and there are three men at the back.
Hampshire woman runs 5.5 marathons. After a decade of unforgettable memories with her beloved cat Misty, a keen Hampshire runner has covered a remarkable 230 kilometres, a total distance equivalent to 5.5 marathons, in celebration of her late pet's life. Laura Wren, from Bishop's Waltham, said she found it hard to be at home with nothing to focus on when Misty died in 2020. but when she saw that she could honour Misty's legacy on Pet Remembrance Day through Battersea's Pet Tribute Funds, she began exploring her options for fundraising. Laura decided to take part in several running challenges to celebrate Misty, while fundraising for the dogs and cats at animal welfare charity Battersea in her memory. Laura ran 100 kilometres in a single week during lockdown in 2020, which marked the start of her fundraising journey. Since then, she has taken part in a number of running challenges, including the 45 kilometres South Coast Ultra Challenge and virtual London Marathon in 2021, and running 50 kilometres for Battersea's Run a Mile a Day in May challenge. To date, she has raised over £750 for the dogs and cats at Battersea who are waiting to bring joy to a new home. Misty's third owner, Laura, described her on their first meeting as perfect. After spending 10 years with Laura and her family, Misty was diagnosed with heart disease and died in May 2020. Laura said, "Misty is fondly remembered for her many quirks, including giving her owners a gentle nudge or headbutt if you stopped fussing over her, and going cross-eyed at the sight or smell of chicken." Pet Remembrance Day takes place every year on July the 5th and offers animal lovers the chance to remember their late pets. And that's accompanied by two little pictures, one showing Laura herself and the other a lovely picture of Misty sat upright, looking slightly cross-eyed, so I think there must have been some chicken close by.
Village Theatre Group holds its 60th anniversary show. The Cheriton Players local amateur theatre group had their 60th anniversary in 2021, and after a one-year COVID delay, they were able to celebrate in style with their production of Calamity Jane last week. Although Calamity Jane the movie was released in 1953, the musical was first produced in 1961, performed in Texas, USA. So, in 2021, it too was celebrating its 60th anniversary. In its time, it was a groundbreaking film about a strong woman in a man's world. But in the end, it's a love story with fits of passion and jealousy, as well as wonderful, tender moments, themes that are perfectly relevant 60 years on. Considering the history, the story, and well-loved songs like Deadwood Stage, Windy City, Black Hills of Dakota, and Secret Love, Calamity Jane was clearly the perfect show for the occasion. Cheriton Village Hall is the Players' usual venue, but the scale of this show required something bigger that could also provide a Western theme. And so local farmer Mark Cheney of Middle Farm Cheriton provided a large empty barn, the perfect blank canvas to work from. And indeed, it does look amazing. The photograph which accompanies this piece has the cast assembled in a corner of the barn, showing the beautiful internal framework of the barn and its roof. And they are all wearing splendid costumes of the late 19th, early 20th century, with uniforms on the men and the wide hats of the cowboys and the ladies in long skirts. It really does look as if everybody's enjoying themselves.
Work underway on vacant post office. Refurbishment work is underway at the vacant site of a former Winchester post office. What was the news shop in Upper High Street now has a to let sign in the window and has been completely stripped of its furnishings as interest mounts in the empty unit. The post office closed in November last year after the previous postmaster resigned. Winchester estate agent Goadsby is now advertising the shop to potential retailers and has said it has already received inquiries, although it remained coy on the details. A spokesman said, "The new lease is direct from the landlord and the property is on the market to let. We've had some interest so far, but we're unable to disclose who from. And there's a picture of the empty shop with the sign in the window and a little inset one of the inside completely stripped of everything. Does seem a bit sad because I can remember it was a small shop, quite cluttered but very useful little post office. I'm sure it will be much missed."
Tudor experience in Market Town. After a year of planning and preparation, a weekend of Tudor-inspired events took place in a Hampshire market town. On July the 2nd, Henry VIII strode down the high street of Bishop's Waltham at 10:15 a.m. He was accompanied by Catherine of Aragon, his court and other followers. The procession was extremely colourful and accompanied by Tudor music from Damien Clark. The procession made its way to the palace grounds for the start of the two-day Tudor experience. During 2021-2022, English Heritage implemented a large restoration project of the palace ruins, which was completed earlier this year. The palace grounds were filled with living Tudor history, including a Tudor village, with reenactment groups showing how ordinary Tudor folk lived by demonstrating cooking, leatherwork, wool spinning and many other crafts. There was a puppet show from Hand to Mouth Theatre, Jonathan the Jester, acrobatic and circus workshops, a falconry show, archery, a demonstration of arming the man and military drill, storytelling, ferret handling and Tudor dancing from local dance group the Gaudettes. Local historian Tony Kippenberger had written a short tableau to illustrate the signing of the Treaty of Waltham, the reason behind the weekend celebrations. It was on July the 2nd, 1522, that Henry and King Charles V of Spain and Holy Roman Emperor arrived in Bishop's Waltham to stay at the palace and sign the Treaty of Waltham. The Bishop's Waltham Museum, which is based in the palace grounds, was open so that people could enjoy the Tudor exhibition that had been curated especially for this occasion and will run for the rest of the summer. On the Saturday evening, a Tudor banquet was held in the old bakehouse of the palace. Guests were entertained with Tudor music and a court jester and were able to enjoy a Tudor meal. In the words of one attendee, "What a brilliantly organised weekend to celebrate the signing of the charter. I had a wonderful time and enjoyed every aspect during the day and at the banquet, which was also a resounding success."
Toadlets in Hampshire on the move this summer. July is the time of year when young toads can be spotted crossing paths and roads en masse as they look to fly the nest or hop the pond. Having grown and developed from spawn into tadpoles during spring, by now the juvenile toads will have metamorphosed and fully exchanged their tails for legs. The young amphibians are now ready to leave their birth ponds and begin their new semi-aquatic lives, splitting their time between land and water. Typically, toadlets will leave the water after a period of rainfall, when thousands can be seen heading for woodland, gardens, hedgerows and tussocky grassland. If you head out looking for them, be very careful where you tread, as the mini amphibians are very hard to spot thanks to their dark brown camouflage skin. At this point, their diet also changes, and the toadlets will set about feeding on slugs, snails, and other invertebrates. By around 3 years old, toads reach breeding age, and incredibly, adults will often return as part of a mass migration to the same pond in which they were spawned to breed. The species is threatened by habitat loss, including a loss of breeding ponds and the drainage of wet areas, leading to a reduced amount of wet woodland. Human infrastructure, like roads in our towns and cities, also impact toads by blocking migration routes to their breeding ponds. In our region, a good place to see toads is Ema Bog and Baddesley Common Nature Reserve in North Baddesley. Otherwise, any other area of wet woodland or in the vicinity of a pond will likely have toads and other amphibians nearby.
Thank you, Frieda. And I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front of the wallet, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening, and until the next time, goodbye, and have a great week.